leader!
Ora, ora.
Hello, I'm Rhys Lyon, bringing you The Week in Parliament with Tom Frewen.
Protesters, petitioners and parliamentarians all converged on the House this week, making full use of the facilities, the roof, the front steps, the debating chamber and the committee rooms where, as Rhys Lyon reports, tempers frayed as opposition MPs were frustrated in their efforts to discover whether the government's payments to a Saudi Arabian businessman was, as they claimed, a bribe or, as the government maintained, a creative resolution to a problem caused by the previous Labour government's imposition of a ban on live sheep exports.
This is farcical, Mr. Yeah. Chair. We started off with a line of questioning around Saudi Arabia. We know that this is in the news. David Parker surely is able to have a supplementary on the narrative that the Minister provided and follow up on it. Instead, we jump now to a completely different subject. You're obviously being paid to sort of cover for this man over here.
Point of order.
It's outrageous. It's actually outrageous.
David, just settle down, bro.
Just settle down, bro. National MP David Bennett's advice to Labour's David Shearer during the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee's budget review of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Mr. Shearer's comments were aimed at committee chairman, National MP Mark Mitchell, after his attempts to shut down supplementary questions on the Saudi farm deal from Mr. Shearer's colleague, David Parker, who also vented his frustrations.
I thought the purpose of select committee scrutiny as ministers was that the opposition, amongst others, were able to question ministers to uncover wrongdoing if it has occurred. Well, I'm being prevented from doing that.
Mark Mitchell said the budget review was supposed to be looking at future, not past, spending.
If you push me into a corner where I'm going to rule on relevance, then that's the way I'll do it.
Having no luck with his scrutiny of Mr. McCulley in the committee rooms, David Parker later sought to put questions to the minister in the chamber, though it was soon apparent that that wasn't likely either.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order, the Honourable David Parker.
I seek leave to carry my question over to another day, given that the minister who was at select committee this morning miraculously is not in the house.
The latter part only damages the point of order that's made. Leave has been sought to transfer this question to the next sitting day. Is there any objection? There is. Order! Order!
So Mr. Parker's questions were fielded by Mr. McCulley's frontbench colleague, Paula Bennett, including one about the day's earlier events back in the committee rooms.
Was the minister surprised that the select committee chair this morning allowed him to make his self-justifying pre-written assertions about his past conduct, then ruled opposition questions about the past out of order and blocked opposition members getting to the bottom of this matter?
Order. I'll invite the Minister to complete the answer.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, I am seldom surprised these days at the inane questions that come from opposition, whether it be in a select committee or in this House.
But that didn't dissuade Mr. Parker from further questions.
Is the reason the Minister is now talking about general trade risks rather than Mr. Khalaf's legal claim because, in truth, these payments were to advance the FTA and trading with Saudi Arabia?
Paula Bennett.
Certainly, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister, the truth that I have seen is a mess that was left by Labour that this government has had to pick up and actually fix.
And that answer from Paula Bennett echoed the Prime Minister's responses to questions on the matter earlier in the week, including a patsy from National Party whip Tim McIndoe on Wednesday.
Has the Prime Minister seen any reports on the issue that Minister McCulley was seeking to resolve with Saudi Arabia?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have. What's clear is that the Labour government created this problem and Minister McCulley has now resolved it.
Prime Minister John Key.
Also absent from the chamber on Thursday when four Greenpeace activists spent the day on the roof of the House protesting at the government's response to climate change was the Minister for Climate Change Issues, Tim Grosser. He had been available the previous day to answer questions which, as the Greens' Kevin Hague complained to the Speaker, had been set down to be answered by the Minister of Health.
Mr. Speaker, this is a question that is primarily around the health consequences of climate change, and competent as a minister, as I'm sure Mr. Grosser is. He is not an expert in health services. He is not in a position to answer supplementary questions about those issues.
but the Speaker, David Carter, ruled that the government had the right to redirect questions around its ministers. So the Greens health spokesman had to put his question to the Minister for Climate Change Issues.
Does he agree with Lancet Commission co-chair Professor Hugh Montgomery that climate change is a medical emergency, but tackling climate change could be the greatest global health opportunity of the 21st century?
The Honourable Tim Grosser.
Mr. Speaker, in the light of the discussion we've just had, let me put it this way. If one were a climate change denier, then in the last few days it's been a very bad run for anyone who is a doctor, a patient or a Catholic.
That answer merely served to confirm Kevin Hague's point, according to his co-leader, Matiria Touré.
Point of order, Matiria Touré.
Frankly, if that was not proof of this minister's inability to answer these questions, I don't know what is.
Order.
And it was certainly
order.
No answer.
Member will resume his seat. Immediately sit down. It's not the answer that I would have hoped for. The way forward is I will now allow the member two additional supplementary questions.
Next day, though, the absence of Mr. Grosser from the chamber meant that Kevin Hague was able to put his questions to the Minister of Health, Jonathan Coleman.
What representation specifically has he made to his cabinet colleagues to call for at least a 40% reduction on 1990 emissions by 2030? As called for example, by the New Zealand College of Public Health Medicine.
The Honourable Dr. Jonathan Coleman.
Mr. Speaker, I've been so busy dealing with Southern DHB, with increasing the numbers of elective surgeries, increasing the numbers of appointments, reading these letters that Mrs. King is sending me, preparing for the launch of the under-13s free GP visits on the 1st of July, that actually I haven't got around to doing that. Sorry.
Sharing the workload of answering Thursday's climate change questions with Jonathan Coleman, the Minister for the Environment, Nick Smith, also faced this question on Tuesday from the Greens spokeswoman on water, Catherine Delahunty.
Is it okay for a government-owned farm operator to sacrifice the health of the Waikato River for increased dairy production in the upper catchment while displacing a carbon sink with yet another source of greenhouse gas emissions? Is that okay with the Minister?
Speaker.
The Honourable Dr. Nick Smith.
Mr. Speaker, the difficulty for the government is that contractual obligations were entered into in 2004 that oblige LandCorp to be able to convert those farms.
Nick Smith said the government's role was confined to one of regulation.
And that is why we have put in place a national policy statement and minimum water quality standards that the Waikato Regional Council is required to implement into their regional plan.
An appeal for the government to do more than regulate was nevertheless the subject of a petition presented before Tuesday's question time and read out by the Clerk of the House, Mary Harris.
The petition of Catherine Delahunty requesting that the House note that 8,102 people have signed a petition, requesting that the House ask the Minister for State-Owned Enterprises to put a moratorium on all future LandCorp managed or owned dairy conversions.
That petition's been sent to the Primary Production Committee, chaired by Nationals' Ian McKelvey, one of five government MPs holding a majority of seats on that committee. And that was one of two petitions that the clerk read out on Tuesday.
The petition of the Honourable Marion Street and 8,974 others requesting that the House investigate public attitudes towards the introduction of legislation which would permit medically assisted dying in the event of a terminal illness or an irreversible condition which makes life unbearable.
That petition had earlier been presented on the front steps of the House, crowd numbers boosted by the presence of opponents of voluntary euthanasia, protesting at the handing over ceremony of the large box of petitions to Labour's Ian Lees-Galloway. Petitions are allocated to select committees according to their subject, and this one has gone to the Health Select Committee, chaired by Nationals member for Tamaki, Simon O'Connor, who's already informed the House of his views on this issue.
People will talk about euthanasia or physician-assisted suicide as caring and compassionate, and I want to go on the record very clearly to say that is fundamentally incorrect. It is not genuine care, and it is not genuine compassion. Mr. Speaker, there is no such thing as a right to die. There is a right to life.
Simon O'Connor speaking in the budget debate on Thursday, May the 28th. And it'll be interesting to see whether members of the Health Committee, if required to vote on what to do with the petition, will be able to exercise a personal or conscience vote. And that became an issue in the Chamber this week, as Rhys Lyon reports.
Debate on members' bills on Wednesday saw just one bill pass its first reading, while three were voted down. One of the unsuccessful was Winston Peters' Super Gold Health Check Bill, which had a close call when it came to its final vote, as announced by Deputy Speaker Chester Burrows.
Members, the ayes are 60, the noes are 61. The motion is not agreed to. Call on members, order of the day,
point of order,
number 4. Point of order, Mr. The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Because I thought I had misheard about the National Party whip has given for another party, we didn't go for a personal vote. But this is so close, I believe we should have a personal vote. And I'm moving that.
No, there is no reason to hold a personal vote. The member must, in suggesting calling for a personal vote, have good reason to believe that members are absent and so the vote is invalid. We call on members...
Point of order. I realise what you've just said. But, Mr. Speaker, when it's that close... When it's that close... Now, with respect, there have been times in the past where people have given the vote. It goes back a long time and not been here. And I've got an example where one night three people didn't make it here in the South, but they were counted and then was found out they weren't here. I think, sir, that close on an issue so critical, we should have a personal vote. And that's what I seek to move.
I don't require any assistance with respect of this matter. I've given my ruling on it, and nothing the Right Honourable Member has said has caused me to change my mind from that call.
Backing up Mr Peters was his New Zealand First Party colleague, Ron Mark.
But in your deliberation you said where the party believes that a member is absent. The Standing Order 144 clearly states a personal vote may be held following a party vote, which has been called for, if a member requests one, which the member has, and the Speaker considers that the decision on a party vote is so close that a personal vote may make a material difference to the result. It makes no mention of us having to believe that someone's not present in the House or may not be here. The vote could not be closer. It is 60-61, and we are exercising our right under 144 in order and asking for
it. Thank you. The member's made his point.
Meanwhile, the Deputy Speaker found an ally in Nationals, Michael Woodhouse.
In support of your decision, I want to draw the House's attention to McGee, Parliamentary Practice in New Zealand, page 208, which goes directly to this. The Speaker has emphasised that closeness on a party vote result cannot by itself be enough to justify holding a personal vote. Depending on party standings in the House, every party vote might be close. It goes on to describe a number of scenarios where, perhaps due to confusion, there may be a reason. The closeness is definitely not one of them.
No, I'm not going to take any further comments or further points of order in respect of this matter. I know the matter has been controversial. I know it's been well canvassed, and I recognise that in a...
I must speak a point of order. Point of order, Speaker.
No, I'm not accepting a point of order.
Deputy Speaker Burrows tried to reason with Mr Peters.
I've shown the member, as the elder in this House, due regard. So I would expect him to show the person seated in the chair due regard. The member will recall that in this House, especially under MMP, votes have often been close. And I'm not going to call a personal vote on the basis of closeness. If the member has a new point of order, he may well put it.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. If you are going to take the advice of the National Minister by reciting McKee, the point of order is that the point of order is, first of all, you'll hear this point of order in silence, but the real issue is this. The standing order is clear. If it was not, you'd go to McGee, but he is not an authority where the standing order is so precise, as my colleague Ron Mark said. Now, that, any lawyer will tell you, is a fact. So, therefore, to have heard that argument and give it credence simply is not the way this House should be conducting its affairs.
Exactly right. And I'll be the judge of how the House is going to be conducting its affairs. And the fact that the Honourable Michael Woodhouse happened to agree with the ruling I'd already made didn't sway my mind one way or another. We call on members, order of the day, number 4.
and along with Mr. Peters' bill, another example of one of those close votes to which Mr. Burrows referred was Labour MP Damien O'Connor's underground coal mining safety bill, which was also defeated in its first reading on Wednesday night by the same margin of 61 to 60. Earlier, MPs debated the Electoral Adjustment of Thresholds Amendment Bill, introduced by its sponsor, Labour's Ian Lees-Galloway.
First, it abolishes the one-seat threshold that allows parties that do not reach the party vote threshold to bring list MPs into Parliament. Secondly, it reduces the party vote threshold from 5% to 4%. And thirdly, it allows for a review of the party vote threshold after three elections with the new party vote threshold in place.
That bill also failed to pass at first reading, defeated by 63 votes to 58. The National Party supported in its opposition to the bill by the Māori Party, United Future and ACT. Three minor parties which combined gained just 2.2% of the popular vote at the last election. And the only member's bill to pass its first hurdle on Wednesday was National MP Alfred Naro's Local Government Auckland Council Amendment Bill No. 3, which passed on a voice vote and was sent to the Local Government and Environment Committee.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back to question time. The Minister for Small Business, Craig Foss, was doing so well answering Patsy questions about improvements in collection of data from rural small businesses that the government's Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, thought he might like some more questions from across the way.
What I would want to offer, sir, is one of the spare National Party supplementaries to the Labour Party, if they should choose to ask
order,
me.
Order. And if they wanted one, I'm sure they'd ask. Question...
Mr. Brownlee then appeared to have second thoughts.
Order. Are you now withdrawing?
No.
As I try and interpret the chaos of the last 20 seconds, Mr. Brownlee has offered one of National's questions, and we look forward to it. Supplementary question, Jacinda Ardern.
To the Minister of Small Business, can he confirm that the business.gov website said after the budget that there was nothing new in the budget for small business other than, of course, the survey he just announced for rural small business?
Speaker.
Honourable Craig Foss.
I welcome the member's megawatt smile and sparkling brown eyes.
Order. Order. I've had to remind this minister on previous occasions how to answer a question. It's a legitimate question. Order! I don't expect to have to give this tutorial to the minister on a regular basis. Would he now answer the question?
Speaker, there were many initiatives announced in the budget that not only affect and improve circumstances for all New Zealand business,
order,
such as tax cuts, Mr. Speaker, which were potentially signalled for 2017, which would be of huge benefit to each and every small business across New Zealand.
Also on Wednesday, kicking off the general debate, Attorney-General Christopher Finlayson listed government achievements to date, eventually getting to housing.
We're building law reform thanks to Amy Adams' good work. We're building houses thanks to Nick Smith. We're rebuilding.
Adding pratfalls there to a week of protesters, petitioners and parliamentarians. Their number boosted by the Speaker welcoming distinguished visitors to the Chamber in the person of the Secretary-General of the Interparliamentary Union, Martin Chungong, and the speakers from the Cook Islands, Fiji, Samoa and Tonga.
Tom Fruin, before we go back and take a closer look at the debate on one of those members' bills on Wednesday night, here's the mystery voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery voice.
Mr. Speaker, there are more than 430 carers in New Zealand, which means around 1 in 10 of us help care for a family member or a friend with everyday life.
Who is the mystery voice and what is she talking about? Here she is again.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery voice.
Mr. Speaker, there are more than 430 carers in New Zealand, which means around 1 in 10 of us help care for a family member or a friend with everyday life.
I'll be back with the identity of the mystery voice and a closer look at her mathematics. But now back to the debating chamber on Wednesday night, when the House took its fortnightly look at members' bills. These are in the name of backbenchers from any party. The only MPs prevented from sponsoring members' bills are government ministers. As we heard earlier, one of those bills up for debate on Wednesday would have got rid of the infamous coattailing provision allowing a political party with an electorate MP to bring in more MPs off its list without having to gain more than 5% of the party vote in a general election. At the same time, the bill would have lowered that threshold from 5% to 4% as recommended in the MMP review conducted by the Electoral Commission in 2012. Failure to implement that recommendation led to Labour's former MP, Leanne Dalzell, drafting this bill and entering it into the ballot, from which it was drawn in November 2013. Then it sat on the order paper, awaiting its first reading until the election in September. Then it was carried over into the new Parliament and finally came up for its first reading on Wednesday night, immediately encountering opposition from National's Jackie Dean, who said the bill was out of date.
And that concerns me for a member who comes to the House and wishes to implement quite sweeping changes to the Electoral Act across a number of fronts, brings a faulty bill to the New Zealand Parliament. And I find that extraordinary that a member would do that, and it rather undermines any argument that that member might advance towards his bill. So if we go back in history a little about this Electoral Adjustment of Thresholds Amendment Bill, and because the member himself wished to go back in history, so let's do our own little bit of history and recall that this is a bill which was first brought to the House by the Honourable Marion Street back in... Leanne Dalzell back in 2012. That's right. So back in 2012, the bill sat in the ballot, as do a number of bills, and it wasn't drawn by the time of the 2014 election, it wasn't drawn by the time the Honourable Leanne Dalzell left the House. So I'm thanking the member for helping me with the history because here we get to the nub of the argument, is that this is the member's history, of course, which is why I'm seeking his help with it, and I'm grateful for it. But if the member cares so much about the history around this bill, then maybe he might have thought to update the objectives of the bill, which I would have thought were pretty pertinent to the debate at hand. So I would invite that member to approach the bill's table, pick up a copy of what is now his bill, because he did pick it up on behalf of the Honourable Leanne Dalzell, who left Parliament, and promoted it as his own bill, and has argued very passionately in this House this afternoon towards the objectives of the bill. Unfortunately, the objectives are out of date. Well, you see, and now the member is trying to defend himself by saying that it is not the substance of the bill. Let me help the member, and I will read from page one of the bill, objectives. And these are Ian Lees-Galloway's words. This bill proposes to implement the main provisions of the Electoral Commission review of MMP in time for the 2014 election.
Yes, because it was drawn before the 2014 election.
This bill is out of date. This bill is out of date. This member did not take the opportunity to update the wording in his own bill.
Following Jackie Dean, Labour's Jacinda Ardern explained why the bill cannot be changed once it is on the order paper.
I have to start my contribution in this House by first thanking the member Ian Lees-Galloway for bringing what is a bill that generally has consensus from the public, a consensus view that this is something that Parliament should do. So that's my first, is my thanks to him for bringing to Parliament something that actually the government should have brought to Parliament, but didn't. So we've been forced to have this debate via a member's bill. Secondly, though, to begin my contribution, I wanted to rebut what the chair of the Justice and Electoral Select Committee had to say. I have great respect for the chair. I think she's an excellent chair. I enjoy being a member of her committee.
What she failed to acknowledge in her contribution, which seemed to focus solely A, on the date of implementation for this bill, and B, whether or not it was the most appropriate mechanism, failed to actually make any other substantive statement on the content of the bill itself. She did not acknowledge that the bill was drawn on the 14th of November 2013.
That's right.
It was perfectly reasonable for the bill to make reference to it coming into force in 2014 because of when it was drafted. Now, of course, all members of the House know that commencement dates frequently change because bills are frequently delayed. And so all the point that the Chair of the Justice Electoral Select Committee just made was actually to remind this House of how members' bills can drag. And members' bills can particularly drag when there are elections in between. So I think it's unfair of that Speaker to have called this member, Enlise Galloway, lazy. Absolutely outrageous when there is a very reasonable explanation for why we have the date on this bill that we have. On the second substantive point that she made in her contribution, the notion that there are better ways to bring an issue like reform around our electoral system, we probably wouldn't disagree with that. Ideally, we believe and we probably would have preferred for the government to have taken the review recommendations by the Electoral Commission, their full report on MMP and the voting system, and simply packaged it together as a bill for this Parliament to debate. Put to the floor the issues that were raised by that review and let us decide. Now, that would have been a reasonable way for us to have that discussion. The government didn't do that.
And although Jacinda Ardern didn't name her, the minister responsible for that decision was former Justice Minister Judith Collins, who spoke later in the debate.
I call the Honourable Judith Collins.
Oh, Mr Speaker, look, it's probably my fault, you know. I was a Minister of Justice who really could possibly have spent the next 2 years trying to get consensus amongst seven different parties in Parliament. And if only I'd done that, we could today have Colin Craig, an MP.
Former Justice Minister Judith Collins speaking in the first reading of the Electoral Adjustments of Thresholds Amendment Bill, which was defeated by the 63 votes of National, the Māori Party Act and United Future, defeating the 58 of all other parties. Now back to the Mystery Voice.
The Week in Parliament, Mystery Voice.
Mr Speaker, there are more than 430 carers in New Zealand, which means around 1 in 10 of us help care for a family member or a friend with everyday life.
That's Minister for Senior Citizens Maggie Barry answering a Patsy question from her fellow National Party caucus member, Scott Simpson.
Mr Speaker, what support is available for those who care for our elderly?
Mr Speaker.
Honourable Maggie Barry.
Mr Speaker, there are more than 430 carers in New Zealand, which means around 1 in 10 of us help care for a family member or a friend with everyday life.
Maggie Barry, who must be using a different calculator from ours, which shows 430 out of 4.3 million to be 1 in 10,000, not 1 in 10. I'm Rhys Lyon reporting for ParliamentToday.co.nz with funding from Parliament.